From a meeting at the office to a big first date, there's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every event. But clothes don't make the man. So why stuff your closet with things that only work for some situations? With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting. Their clothing is understated and tells the world that you stay you wherever you go. They craft each piece by combining timeless style and modern performance materials, so you can stay looking good and feeling comfortable from morning to evening. No wardrobe changes required. Browse everything from summer-ready tech linen shorts and anti-odor polos to tailored sweats and crews for a night in. They can outfit you for anything, no matter what's on your agenda for the day. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com, promo code MACK25.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everyone, Peter Zine here, coming to you from Austin, Texas. A lot of you have written in over and over and over, asked me what I really do worry about, and so that's the topic of today's video. Overall, I am not stressed out about the United States. There aren't a lot of things that can hurt us. We basically have a hemisphere to ourselves, certainly the best part of a continent. And we're energy independent, we're a massive energy and food exporter, and you can have entire continents catch on fire, and it really doesn't do anything to the United States. In addition, if you factor out things like food and energy exports, the United States is only integrated with the rest of the world to about the tune of 10% of GDP, which is somewhere between one-third and one-fifth what more traditional world powers historically have been, whether you're talking about the British Empire or the China of today. So things would have to go really bad on a global basis for the United States to really even have a mild problem. That doesn't mean there aren't problems. It just means you have to look a little bit closer to home. And I'm not talking about here about politics. I'm talking about drugs. Now, the traditional story has been one of cocaine. And cocaine is, from my point of view, pretty easy to understand because it has straightforward concentrations and straightforward vulnerabilities that you would expect from an agricultural supply chain. So you grow the stuff in a specific type of climate in Bolivia and Ecuador and Colombia. You harvest the leaves, you dry them, you process them, oftentimes with gasoline. You make a crystal, you turn that into powder, and then you smuggle the powder by water and by air into Central American countries. And then you get on land and you go up through the various mountain corridors of Central America and Mexico until you eventually reach the U.S. border, and then you distribute it from there. As a rule, looking at this from an economist's point of view, it takes about 6 man-hours per dose of cocaine, and the dose is going to vary by person, but it's going to be definitely less than half a gram unless you just want to, like, cheat death or risk death or die. A lethal dose is about 1.2 grams, so, you know, definitely do. Cocaine's bad, but don't do more than a gram. Okay. That is something that we understand, and there are a number of places in the supply chain where you cannot interrupt it. You can try to do crop eradication at the point of source. You can try to work with third governments like Colombia to try to interdict. You can work with the Mexicans in order to break up the cartel network that handles distribution. Or you can go against retail distribution in the United States by going after the gangs. These are all options, and we've explored all of them in the past. But none of these really work very well for the new drug, which is called fentanyl. Fentanyl, unlike cocaine, is not organic. It's not an agricultural product. It's a synthetic, a chemical process. And the process for creating it is much simpler than it is for cocaine. You use a number of base materials, and you don't really need all that many of them. And a lot of the precursors are just flat out legal. So what happens is in China, they make the precursors, and then American citizens, as a rule, order them, and they're shipped in containers about the size of this. This is about a half a liter. And you get about 6 equivalent of these. And you get them to the United States, you repackage them, you take them down to the Mexican border, and then you use the Mexican postal system to ship them to wherever they need to go. And for the most part, these steps are legal because the precursors can be used in other materials. once the precursors get to somebody who has a garage set up for chemical work, you basically take the equivalent of people who barely passed high school chemistry, and if you've got three of them in a hot plate, you can basically make about a kilogram of finished fentanyl in about a week. That assumes that you have relatively incompetent lab techs. If they're not Kramer quality, if they actually made it through undergrad, you can probably make about 3 kilos. That stuff then can be pressed into pills and sent north. Much smaller volumes involved. So remember, cocaine, about 1.2 grams is a lethal dose. That same 1.2 grams of fentanyl would be enough to kill over 500 people. You're talking about just a couple grains of sand equivalent is enough to kill someone. And this is why it's become such a problem in the United States, because instead of 6 man-hours per dose, it's just a few man-seconds per dose, and it's a synthetic, and there are fewer places that you can interrupt it. Now, fentanyl has another problem. Because it's so easy to get into the business, because with 1 week of work, you can make a few million dollars, that same fentanyl doesn't require the huge sorts of structures, social structures, cultural structures, economic structures that are needed for the cocaine economy. So with cocaine, because it's all about controlling the transit systems and the production sites, you get cartels at the point of production and points of transit, and then you got the gangs and the points of distribution. In Mexico, that has created the cartels, who have taken a big chunk out of the transit system and then worked up and down the transit systems to control more and more territory. With fentanyl, that doesn't work so well, because fentanyl just needs, you know, 3 dudes in a garage and, you know, a mailbox. And that means that we're seeing dozens, if not hundreds, of millionaires popping up in the Mexico organized crime group that are largely disassociated from the cartels, or maybe they rely on the cartels for shipping, but they don't necessarily need to. It also means that fentanyl tends to be a lot more lethal, not just because it requires so much less. It's like the individual mom and pops don't perceive quality control as one of their major concerns. So they just press the stuff in tablets and off it goes. And since it takes so little to kill someone, we've had 100,000 people die in 2022 and 2023 from fentanyl overdoses in the United States. Now, in recent times, we've seen kind of 3 things happen. Number one, the cartels are starting to fracture. They're not as powerful as they used to be, and smaller factions are getting into fentanyl manufacture, thumbing their nose at the central authorities of the cartel leadership, regardless of where in Mexico you are. So we're actually seeing a lot more violence in Mexico rather than less, in part because now we've had a kind of democratization of the supply chain system for illegal drugs in Mexico. Second, in the United States, we have seen fatality rates drop. A couple reasons for that. Number one, those mom and pops are starting to realize that if you kill all of your customers, they don't buy anymore. So for fentanyl pills that have been intercepted by law enforcement, only about half of them now have lethal doses, only, as opposed to 70% from 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, from a production point of view, I guess there's some quality control going in there. Second, if you are a teenager and you look at people in their 20s who are basically killing themselves with fentanyl, like, you know, maybe that's not the drug for me. And other more traditional drugs like this methamphetamine and cocaine are making a little bit of a comeback. Whether this trend has legs is something that we just don't know. There's so much about drugs that are a fad issue, and it's unclear whether or not today's Zoomers have moved on from fentanyl or they're just taking a break for a moment. Don't know what to cheer for there. Third, because the cartels are breaking down, we're seeing a few problems with transit. If you have lots and lots and lots of cartel on cartel violence, oftentimes the shipment doesn't make it on time. But probably the biggest reason we've seen deaths go down in the United States is it's not new anymore. So hospitals and clinics have a little bit better idea of what to look out for, and they've developed some protocols and some medications to help people survive overdoses. It's kind of like how during the Iraq War, we saw a lot more soldiers live, but with horrible wounds because medical care had improved to deal with things like IEDs. So if you're looking for something to worry about, I don't worry so much about Trump. I don't worry so much about radical Democrats. I don't worry so much about Iran or Russia, unless nukes get involved. I worry about America's drug habits and how we've seen the democratization of the violence in Mexico that is breaking down the social stability of our primary trading partner. And if you want something a little bit more at home to worry about, let's assume for the moment that the Mexicans succeed in driving fentanyl out of their system completely. Well, it only takes 3 jabonis in a garage to do it. And those jabonis don't have to speak Spanish. So if Mexico stops being the primary processing place for fentanyl demand in the United States, Americans are perfectly capable of picking up that baton and processing the fentanyl in anyone who has a garage and a power outlet.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.